Welcome to NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Here are today's top stories. Iran said military retaliation by the U.S. or Saudi Arabia would lead to an all-out war. U.S. and Saudi governments still weighing options after drone strike on oil production. Iran has not taken responsibility. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau apologized after a picture surfaced of him at a school party wearing brown face. The photo was taken from a yearbook at a school where Trudeau taught. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu asks his political opponent to join him in unity after elections that were too close to call, but rival Benny Gantz shows resistance, prefers to lead instead. U.S. lawmakers join Hong Kong human rights activists in trying to get a bill passed and protect the rights of Hong Kong's people. Downton Abbey actress talks ahead of movie release, reveals how the movie is similar and different to the popular TV series. U.S. fans anxiously await its North American release, set to be in theaters Friday. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in the Middle East today, where he called the attack on Saudi oil plants an act of war. Both he and Saudi officials blame Iran for the attack, which Iran denies.
On Thursday, Iran's foreign minister said Iran won't blink if there is a counterstrike from the U.S. or Saudi Arabia, and that if there is, it will lead to all-out war. Pompeo visited Saudi Arabia on Wednesday to discuss a response to the attack. He also visited the United Arab Emirates and said the U.S. is working on building a coalition to bring the situation to a peaceful resolution. President Trump initially said Iran was behind the attack and that a counterattack, even if it caused casualties, would be warranted. But recently, he has struck a more cautious tone, saying he was waiting for more information before saying who was behind it. The Iran-backed Houthis in Yemen claimed responsibility for the attack. But Saudi Arabia said it has evidence that the weapons used in the attack were from Iran. Trump has also expressed wariness about getting into a conflict with Iran, saying he doesn't want to get the U.S. into another war. Pompeo said the U.S. is planning more sanctions on Iran.
We have set about a course of action to deny Iran the capacity and the wealth so that they can conduct their terror, to prevent them from conducting their terror campaigns.
Trump ally and Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham said the U.S. needed to take retaliatory action beyond sanctions to send a clear message to Iran.
I am looking for a response that would be unequivocal. If they don't pay a price for bombing a neighbor's oil fields, then all hell is going to break out in the Mideast.
President Trump said there was still plenty of time to do some dastardly things to Iran if the U.S. wanted to.
It's very easy to attack. But if you ask Lindsey, ask him, how did going into the Middle East, how did that work out?
On Saturday, Saudi Arabia's largest oil processing facility was hit, sending its output down by half and affecting the global oil market. Trump has said the U.S. may tap into its reserves if need be. But Saudi Arabia says it will be back to full production by the end of September. NTD News.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said there is no doubt that Iran is behind the attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil plants and laid out the evidence for why he and Saudi Arabia believe that.
I think it's abundantly clear, and there is an enormous consensus in the region that we know precisely who conducted these attacks was Iran. I didn't hear anybody in the region who doubted that for a single moment.
While the Houthi rebels in Yemen claimed responsibility for the attack, Pompeo said the Houthis didn't have the weapons that Saudi Arabia found at the site of the attack. Pompeo said the U.S. has not seen the type of UAV systems used in the attack deployed outside Iran. And based on the flight pattern of the missiles, he said, they could not have come from Yemen and or southern Iraq. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau apologizes after a photo surfaced of him wearing a brown face at a party in 2001.
Trudeau spoke to reporters Wednesday after Time magazine published the image. He said he was dressed up in an Aladdin costume for a gala where the theme was Arabian Nights.
I take responsibility for my decision to do that. I shouldn't have done it. I should have known better. It was something that I didn't think was racist at the time, but now I recognize it was something racist to do, and I am deeply sorry.
Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer expressed shock about the image.
And what Canadians saw this evening is someone with a complete lack of judgment and integrity and someone who's not fit to govern this country.
Trudeau is on the campaign trail for the national election on October 21st.
Israel's former military chief Benny Gantz declared victory in Israel's election today, though his win is not yet official. This after Israel's prime minister invited him to join a unity government, but was greeted coolly amid the continued deadlock.
The deadlock has already raised speculation about a possible third election in the coming months, just 2 days after an unprecedented repeat vote. During the election, I called for the establishment of a right-wing government. But to my regret, the election results show that this is impossible. With nearly all ballots counted by Thursday local time, the centrist Blue and White Party stood at 33 seats in Israel's 120-seat parliament. Netanyahu's conservative Likud stood at 31 seats. Neither party, however, can muster a majority of 61 seats. Now I call you Knesset member Benny Gantz. Benny, we must set up a broad unity government as soon as today. The nation expects us, both of us, to demonstrate responsibility and that we pursue cooperation. At a blue and white meeting, Gantz gave Netanyahu's offer an icy reception, shrugging off Netanyahu's offer and saying he plans to establish a unity government headed by himself. Neither party can form a majority government without the support of the election's apparent kingmaker, Avigdor Lieberman of the Yisrael Beitenu Party, who refuses to sit with Netanyahu's ultra-Orthodox religious allies and has called for a secular government. Israeli President Reuven Rivlin will consult with all parties in the coming days and select the candidate who has the best chance of putting together a stable coalition, who will then have 42 days to do so.
President Trump visited a wall on the border in Mexico and California Wednesday, reminding reporters that there was still a national emergency with regard to border security. He added that in an effort to combat it, his administration is working to end the so-called catch-and-release practice at the southern border, with the goal of shutting it down by early October.
During a visit to the border wall in San Diego, President Trump showcased some details of the ongoing wall construction.
This is going to be close to 500 miles by the time we finish. Those are the areas that are most important. After we're completed five, that should be done pretty close to next year.
Trump reiterated there is still a national emergency with regard to border security.
This is certainly a tremendous national emergency because of human trafficking, drugs, and people coming in illegally. And in many cases, those people have criminal records and we don't want them in our country.
Earlier this year, Trump declared a national emergency in a bid to fund the wall, his signature campaign promise at the U.S.-Mexico border. He explained the U.S. troops could be taken away from the border if the wall was built. He warned, however, that if Mexico were to stop helping stem the flow of immigrants to the U.S., he would consider imposing tariffs on Mexican import. The concrete-filled bollards currently under construction are designed to absorb heat, an effective climate deterrent.
Plus, it's designed to absorb heat. So it's extremely hot. The wall is, you won't be able to touch it. You can fry an egg on that wall. It's very, very hot.
It was a repeat visit for Trump, who traveled there in March 2018 to see border wall prototypes that authorities later destroyed. NTD News.
A flash flood emergency warning in effect for areas east of Houston today as Tropical Depression Imelda dumps rainfall on parts of Texas.
Major flooding in parts of the Lone Star State. High water is being reported in and around Winnie, Texas. Severe flooding taking up homes and businesses.
When it started coming up, and by the time you start getting ready, it was up.
Yeah.
When I told her the time that you want to leave, it's now.
Yeah.
And that's 5-10 minutes later.
An evacuation order was put in place for Riceland Hospital, according to Chambers County Emergency Management officials. The Chambers County Sheriff's Office said Winnie is being devastated by rising water and that water rescues are ongoing.
I think that probably the rescues are probably minimal.
Uh-huh.
Most of who we've been getting are a lot of elderly and a lot of disabled.
Okay.
All right, so a lot of people are just hunkering down in their houses that now just have water in them.
The Red Cross has opened a flood shelter to help those affected.
New York is banning flavored vaping products. NTD's Miguel Moreno has the response from the streets of Manhattan.
Yes, we cotton candy, honey, and all fruit-flavored e-cigarettes have been banned from being sold in stores. The ban is in response to the rising number of students vaping in high school, as well as over 300 cases of lung illnesses and 6 deaths believed to be linked to vaping across the country. But the ban has been criticized. For one, menthol and tobacco flavors are exempt from the order. Fruit flavors are the number one choice among high schoolers, and in second place, Health and Human Services reported menthol. We asked people in New York what they thought of the ban.
I feel like those flavors like strawberry, raspberry markets the kids too much. I mean, I used to vape too originally, but I used it to like quit cigarettes.
I personally don't believe it'll have too much of an effect. I think they're going to figure out a way around it. I mean, I also think that people aren't too afraid to go to tobacco or menthol products.
When I first heard about it, I thought to myself, well, why aren't we doing this with regular cigarettes? What is the difference between the flavored stuff and regular? All of it should go out the window.
Dhaliwal mentioned that he stopped smoking tobacco products altogether through vaping, but he doesn't think that a lack of flavors would have stopped him from using it to quit. Businesses have a 2-week grace period before they can no longer sell the flavored products. The ban isn't permanent, it's only for 90 days, and once that time is up, unless legislation is passed that would make it permanent or that order is renewed, companies in New York will be allowed to continue to sell flavored e-cigarettes. Miguel Moreno, NTD News, New York.
Some of the best views in Washington, D.C. will be available to tourists and visitors alike as the Washington Monument reopens to the public today after a 37-month closure to modernize elevators and security.
At 555 feet, the Washington Monument is one of the most iconic structures in the U.S. Capitol and offers spectacular views of the city's landmarks.
That does not have tall buildings, so you have these wonderful unobstructed views of the other iconic buildings in the city. You're looking at the Capitol and the White House and Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial. So,
designed by Robert Mills and constructed in the late 19th century, the monument was built in honor of the first president of the United States and founding father, George Washington. It hosts hundreds of thousands of visitors a year who enjoy the unparalleled views, which can be credited not only to its unique location, but to its identity as the city's tallest building.
And whether it's here or going up the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, I mean, there is always a thrill.
It is the second time this century that the monument has undergone significant restoration after closing from 2011 to 2014 to repair damage following an earthquake.
Up next, U.S. lawmakers join Hong Kong human rights activists in trying to get a bill passed to protect the rights of Hong Kong's people. That and more when we return. Taiwan signing off on its intent to buy nearly $4 billion of U.S. grains and meat, strengthening ties at a time of significant shifting dynamics in the region.
Taiwan committed to purchase $3.7 billion of American grains and meat for the years 2020 and 2021 at a letters of intent signing ceremony on Wednesday.
This gathering reflects the very best example of the strong friendship between the U.S. and Taiwan.
The agricultural products purchased on the Agricultural Goodwill Mission include soybeans, corn, wheat, and beef. More than 20 members of Congress from various agricultural states in the U.S. attended the signing ceremony.
This outstanding trade relationship benefits both countries.
And so it's a very, very important portion of our business, and it's raised in significance because it's a larger percentage now that some of the tariff impact with China.
The U.S.-China trade war continues, affecting U.S. farmers. Beijing is looking to take control of Taiwan using the one country, two systems it has in Hong Kong. And this week invested billions in the neighboring Solomon Islands in exchange for switching its diplomatic ties from Taiwan to China, increasing its influence in the region. After the trip in Washington, D.C., the Taiwan Agricultural Goodwill Mission will be divided into 3 delegations and travel to 11 agricultural states to meet with local officials, exporters, and farmers, exploring opportunities for cooperation. In his speech, Stilwell said the U.S. commitment to Taiwan is stronger than ever. Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Hong Kong democracy activists joined U.S. lawmakers again yesterday to call on Congress to pass the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act.
Joshua Wong and other pro-democracy advocates called on Congress to pass legislation to punish Beijing for its interference in Hong Kong's internal affairs.
Hong Kongers never walk alone, and we will continue our uphill battle until the day we enjoy freedom and democracy.
The Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act would change the United States' special economic treatment of Hong Kong. The city has operated under a one-country, two-systems arrangement with China since the UK handed it over in 1997 and enjoys certain freedoms that the rest of China doesn't. The bill requires the Secretary of State to submit a yearly report on how closely Beijing is adhering to the one-country, two-systems agreement.
Be some sort of a monitoring of how the regime of China, they are destroying these values that we all cherish.
New Jersey Republican Chris Smith is the sponsor of the bill. He said he tried and failed to get it passed under the Obama administration, but thinks the Trump administration will support it.
And we got to play a strong supportive role, and we have real tools that we can use.
The bill has been approved in committee and is now awaiting a vote on the House floor. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House would vote on it as soon as possible.
Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate enthusiastically support this legislation.
Congressman Jim McGovern also urged lawmakers to pass a bill he introduced earlier this month that would prevent the U.S. from selling police equipment to Hong Kong.
U.S. companies should not be complicit in a crackdown on pro-democracy protesters.
McGovern is the chairman of the Congressional Executive Commission on China, which met yesterday and heard testimony from the Hong Kong activists. With reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Up next, Ukraine seeks to end the war. Russia not budging on demands. Peace process runs into difficulty. Find out more after the break. Russia is demanding that Ukraine make significant compromises if it wants to end hostilities between them. This after the two countries exchanged prisoners earlier this month in what many saw as the first step towards resolving the conflict in Ukraine's east.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky had hoped to hold a meeting in Paris on Monday aimed at resolving the war in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region, where Ukraine's army has been fighting with Russian-backed separatists for 5 years.
Ukrainian authorities insist that the election in the occupied territories could be successful only after withdrawal of troops and conducted according to Ukrainian law.
However, Russia refused to negotiate, saying that they must agree on paper to the plan proposed by the former German foreign minister and current president Frank-Walter Steinmeier. Steinmeier proposed in 2016 that elections be held in Donbas and that if the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe considered them fair, then Ukraine would grant special status to Donbas, giving it more autonomy. It's not clear yet what decision Ukraine will make. Many are tired of the war and are ready to compromise, while others perceive the Steinmeier plan as too big of a compromise with Russia.
For the 300,000 who fought in the Donbas region over the years, for the ultra-patriotic part of the population, this is complete betrayal. It is, in fact, surrender and looks to them like Ukraine lost.
According to one political analyst, Ukraine can either continue the conflict for decades or establish peace under bad conditions for Ukraine, which would likely spark protests. President Zelensky is more flexible than his predecessor and more open to the Steinmeier plan. The end of the war was one of his campaign promises.
Since Zelensky has a very high rating today, under 70%, this gives him carte blanche for making such decisions that Poroshenko could not make. I get the impression that he is ready to take this step, and probably after this in Ukraine, we should expect very violent protests.
At the same time, Kiev has not shown a willingness to grant Donbas special status.
The next meeting in the so-called Normandy format, which means multilateral talk between France, Germany, Russia and Ukraine, will likely be held in October. Volodymyr Zelensky, Ukrainian president, is expected to bring up the question how to end shelling in Donbas region.
Reporting by Anna Varava, NTD News, Kiev, Ukraine.
And our reporter speaking with a political analyst on one of the most powerful waves of surges in recent years in Russia, taking place at the headquarters of opposition leader Alexei Navalny's anti-corruption fund and hundreds of its activists' homes.
In Russia, searches were performed at homes of the coordinators of Alexei Navalny Foundation. Political analysts call this a show trial, which serves to teach opposition a lesson.
It happened to 200 activists from 43 regions of Russia, including Moscow and St. Petersburg. Authorities blocked some activists' personal bank accounts and seized equipment and laptops. There were no arrests. Experts say the searches were planned back in the summer, but the authorities waited for the elections to take place so as not to further provoke dissatisfaction from voters. This is the stage of revenge of the law enforcement agencies for being restrained by them. They are taking it out. This is an attempt to destroy the infrastructure of this protest. The official reason for the search is a money laundering investigation Russian authorities opened in August against Navalny. Leader of the anti-corruption fund, Navalny claims that the reason is the success of his smart voting program, which provides advice about voting for opposition candidates. The anti-corruption fund released video investigations revealing corruption of senior officials and has gained support in large cities. Meanwhile, experts say that this large-scale wave of searches will not paralyze protest activity in Russia. The peculiarity of civil society, which people working in law enforcement agencies don't understand, is that it's not a vertical structure. This is a horizontal system, a grassroots. There is no value in removing a leader. Three more new ones will appear in his place. Social unrest in Russia has since calmed down, but experts predict that waves of discontent will manifest more often over social issues.
And up next, an actress in Downton Abbey talks ahead of movie's release, discloses where it picks up from the television drama. Headed for theaters on Friday, find out more after the break. U.S. Downton Abbey fans are anxiously awaiting the North American release of the television period drama tomorrow. The film comes 4 years after the series concluded. When asked to describe it in one word, the actor said welcoming, joyous, and love.
Actress Michelle Dockery revealed the film begins close to where the TV show left off.
Not much has changed until a letter arrives from the King and Queen saying that they are coming to Downton. So it's a great story because it involves every single character that you love in the show, and they all have a role to play in this great occasion that's, you know, about to take place at Downton.
The film is set in 1927 and continues the story about a British household in the early 20th century. It's rated PG. The award-winning show first aired in 2011 and went on for 6 seasons, gaining a large following in the UK and the US.
President Trump giving a shout-out to the US Air Force yesterday, which is celebrating its 72nd birthday.
Trump wrote, "Happy 72nd birthday to our great U.S. Air Force." Established in 1947 after World War II, the U.S. Air Force has since defended the country in the air, space, and cyberspace. In a presidential message, Trump said, "For more than 7 decades, America's airmen have been at the forefront of protecting our citizens and helping the U.S. promote global peace and prosperity." While it started out as a small group, the Air Force became more prominent in the First World War. Its importance only continued to grow, especially during World War II when the skies became the ultimate battleground. Now, the U.S. Air Force is celebrating 72 years of continuing to push higher, faster, and further.
And that's all for now. Join us again this evening for your NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer.